Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck, live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts. You'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. So we have a special interview for you guys. And so I don't want to take up too much of your time, get you all the coverage and all the content. That was an awesome interview with radio host Danny Parkins from the Spiegel and Parkins show on 670 The Score. You can follow him at Danny Parkins or their show at Spiegel underscore Parkins. Before we get to the interview, I need to say something, Matt. I want to repeat this loud and clear. In no way, shape, or form will I take any responsibility to what happened to Jordan Bell last night. I know I had a bunch of people tweet at me early on last night during that early part of the game. When I said I wanted someone to dunk on him last night or put him on a poster, I wanted him to get hurt, especially on the first possession of the game. And that's what it seems like happened. I had a couple of people tweet at me and go, man, Jordan, look at what you did now. Look at what you did. And then I was on my way home driving. And so I missed that first portion of it. So I'm like, what are people talking about? And I flipped the game on and looked at the stats and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Did that really just happen? Did he really get hurt on the first possession of the game on a posterizing dunk from Robin Lopez? So I will stand here right now on Locked On Bulls and say I will not take a responsibility for any of that that happened last night.
Yeah, no, I that's fine. I won't blame you at all for that. It was crazy because everybody was hyped up for that game. I was at the UC last night, and first thing I noticed is that, like, I wouldn't say 50-50, but close to 50-50, Warriors fans just flocked into United Center last night. The cheers for Steph Curry during intros were basically louder than anybody on the Bulls, even Zach LaVine. I was having Portillo's at the Ontario location with some of my buddies before we went to the game, and we ran into some Warriors fans there who were like, oh, you guys are going to the game. Like, cool, cool. We talked Bulls Warriors, but it was electric because it was the Warriors, right? And the first play of the game, Lopez just, there's a, you know, the paint parts like the Red Sea. He comes down and just destroys Jordan Bell's soul, and Bulls fans loved it. They ate it up. Everybody got out of their seat on the first play of the game, and then he stays down. The action goes to the other side of the court, and then he's still down, and then it's, okay, hold on. You know, trainers rush over, players rush over, and it was so weird because it was a huge shift from, oh my gosh, what a way to start this game that everybody's been anticipating, this monster Lopez dunk on Jordan Bell, and then he's wheeled off in a wheelchair, and then, you know, you could hear a pin drop in the UC. It was sort of like this huge, momentous, exciting start, and then whoosh, like all the energy went out of the building, and you feel bad for Jordan Bell. And the initial reports are that the x-rays were negative. I think he was scheduled to have an MRI today. I still haven't heard anything conclusive about that, but hopefully not as bad as it looked, but a scary moment. And absolutely, I give you a pass. I know that you would never wish that much ill on anybody, even Jordan Bell.
So right before we get to the interview, one quick other note, Matt, since you were at the game last night, and I noticed this on TV early on, especially in that first quarter where the Warriors seemed to just throw away the last 30 seconds of that first quarter. And it's not how you end a first quarter for a team like the Golden State Warriors. But I noticed it on TV just from the lower level, and maybe you can give me a little bit more of an insight of what happened inside the arena. But it seemed like for the first time in maybe 2 years, I saw the United Center explode with excitement. the way in ways in which like they would explode if Jimmy Butler had just knocked down a game winner like he did against the Nets or something like that. I think that's like the closest point that I got to thinking about how the United Center used to rock when Noah was there, even when Butler had his shine in games like I talked about with the Brooklyn Nets, him hitting that game winner. Did you notice anything different from the atmosphere, at least at the end of that quarter, where the United Center kind of exploded? Or am I just making things up and seeing things just from the lower bowl on TV?
No, I mean, no, you're absolutely right, Jordan. I mean, that it was electric in the building when that happened. And it's something I talk about with Parkins in our interview that's coming up here in a minute, that, you know, when the Bulls made the comeback late in that game, Markkanen had a 3-point shot that would have cut the lead, the Warriors lead, to 2 with like a little less than a minute left. And there was one of those, you know, audible, everybody in the building was like, saw Markkanen is about to take this 3. It's a huge moment in the game. And the end of the first quarter, also, as you mentioned, when they had that little stretch where the Bulls had kind of been behind somewhere between 12 and 6 points the whole first quarter, trying to keep up. And then the Warriors fell apart. Denzel Valentine misses the second of 2 free throws, gets his own rebound for a putback, and then the Warriors screw up the ensuing inbound play. Nico gets a steal, dishes, and all of a sudden you look up and you're like, wait, hold on. The first quarter's over and the Bulls are winning 40-38. But when that sequence ended and Nico fed, I think it was Nwaba, for an easy 2, like with 0.1 seconds left at the end of that quarter, the UC was popping. Like it was, you know, I've been to a handful of games this season. That was the most excited I've seen that environment in a long time. And I know that the big name opponent, the defending champs, they have a lot to do with that. The Warriors fans brought a lot of their energy into the game. So it was, you know, every bucket, every play, there was cheering going on. So, you know, it was definitely, I think the Warriors fans contributed to that. But Bulls fans, for the credit that they deserve, I felt something at the UC last night that I hadn't felt there in a long time.
Well, without further ado, let's get to our interview with Danny Parkins of 670 The Score. Hopefully you enjoy the interview. Follow him on Twitter at Danny Parkins. But here's the interview with Danny Parkins. All right, so now we bring on our special guest here for today's episode, radio host Danny Parkins from the Spiegel and Parkins Show on 670 The Score. Follow him at Danny Parkins on Twitter or their show at Spiegel_Parkins. All right, Danny, first thing I got to start off with you, I have to congratulate you on 2 separate occasions here this week. First being your 1-year anniversary with 670 as the midday show host, and secondly, pulling off the greatest troll move since probably the hashtag GarPax billboard in the summer by giving Warriors Jordan Bell a $3.5 million t-shirt that you guys had created for your show pregame. So how did Jordan Bell, outside the video that's been kind of surfaced around social media last night, how did Jordan Bell react when you gave him the shirt outside of the video? And what was kind of the remarks being said around the locker room? Was it better than you expected? Was it funny? How did that sort of interaction go with Jordan Bell?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It was it went better than I expected overall. I'm glad you guys liked it. I think most people did. A few people didn't, but that's okay. that's kind of the way of the world, I suppose. Yet Jordan, he had seen the shirts on Twitter, the mock-up of the shirt, but he did not know that the shirt really existed. He thought it was just kind of an image of a thing on Twitter. He didn't know that we really were selling it with proceeds going to Feed My Starving Children. So like, he thought that component of it was a joke. So he kind of got a kick out of that. And the guys in the locker room were confused because normally the media is coming in there to ask them like the same banal questions that they get all the time. And then there I am with like a sack of shirts over my shoulder. Cause like I had handed him an XL and he was like, well, do you have a large? And so like, I was like going through like some 2Xs and XLs and larges to like flip around. I think you saw that in the video. So, you know, Draymond was, on the phone with someone and he was just like looking at me smiling. Like he just thought he was just like found it so amusing. what was going on. A couple of the other guys like didn't know what was going on. They didn't want any shirts. I left the shirt on Draymond's locker room stall. The funniest part was probably Iguodala because I asked Bell if he would take a picture with the shirt and he said no. He said originally said no, and then he said yes, but there's a rule for no still photography. You can take video, but there's no still photography in locker rooms. And but it wasn't a PR staffer who pointed that out. It was Andre Iguodala. And he was like, and he cursed. He was like, can I swear on your guys' podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, go for
it. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Yeah, he's like, no fucking still photography in the fucking locker room. And, you know, like, acting very, very serious. And I was like, oh, you know, sorry, you know, not trying to cause any trouble. And so the picture we got, we actually pulled off of that video from Mark Medina, who I know from Syracuse, who covers the Warriors. And he thought the whole thing was hilarious. And so that kind of helped me, because Medina, like, introduced me to Jordan Bell, and then he introduced me to Swaggy P, and then he introduced me to Iguodala and all those guys. So I was just, like, hanging in the locker room with their beat writer, who's there all the time. So I think that kind of broke down the barrier a little bit. Then I told him it was for charity. And then Iguodala, like, later on, when I was talking to Swaggy P about it, he was like, hey, man, I was just fucking with you. I'm like, oh, I know, no worries. And then he, like, got really serious again. He's like, but why are you trying to start drama in the locker room? I was like, I'm not. And he's like, ah, I'm just kidding. I don't want to be in your business. So, like, he was, like, literally being, like, bipolar and going back and forth with me and messing around with the whole thing. So it was fun. It was funny. I find it to be harmless, fun, good natured. Yes, it is a troll job of the Bulls, obviously. But I find it to be good natured, and some people disagree, but that's okay.
Well, Danny, we all know that Jordan Bell had himself a pretty impressive game. When these teams faced off in November, you know, of course, his first NBA career start, he does the money symbol as he's making his way onto the court. That one that was played in Oakland, and this one, a non-factor, and for an unfortunate reason, he did start because there was no Draymond last night, no Iguodala. But the first play of the game, within seconds, he gets dunked on by Robin Lopez, takes a nasty fall, and is out. So he was not a factor. This was a night when, you know, Curry dropped 30. Clay dropped 38. You know, the Splash Brothers did their thing. Durant chipped in with 19 and 7 assists. From the Bulls' perspective, obviously, 119-112, the Bulls actually were up after one and up at halftime. They won three of the four quarters of this game and end up losing by seven, which is a hell of a lot better than their 49-point drubbing. What was your biggest takeaway from either the Bulls as a whole in their effort last night, or perhaps one individual player?
It was just weird as a Bulls fan to watch the champs at the UC and feel like the Bulls deserved to be on the court with them in a year in which they were expected to have 21 wins.
Like, pretty weird. Crazy, right?
Yeah, it's just like how far we came. And, like, I know, you know, trap game, letdown game for the Warriors. They just had a Cavs game. They had a Bucks game. Iguodala's not playing, Draymond's not playing, Jordan Bell's basically not playing. So it's a way less defensive than they normally are. They're way less athletic than they usually are. They're not using all the effort. Like, all those caveats aside, right? Like, biggest game of the year for the Bulls, least important game of the year for the Warriors. Like, all of those things aside, it still was pretty insane to, for three of the four quarters, watch the Bulls go haymaker for haymaker with the Warriors playing their style of basketball, and, as you said, winning three to four quarters and coming out ahead. So it was just bizarre. You know, Nico Mirotic going on personal 8-0 runs and getting heat checked and posting guys up and drawing fouls and marking and playing with an insane amount of confidence. Like, it was odd to see them play so well. The Bulls legitimately believed that they could have won that game. And probably legitimately believe that they should have won that game. And that's just insane. So they're better than any of us thought. And I think the story of the Bulls season right now is the conflict of, is that a good thing? Like, is it a good thing that the Bulls are this much better than we thought? Because this year the goal was to be awful and they're not awful. Whereas in the past, when the goal was to be good, they were actually awful. So I think that's, like, the question of the moment for Bulls fans right now.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it. We talked about it several times over this stretch, even just when Nico Mirotic came back. in December. They went on that 7-game winning streak. They've been playing a whole hell of a lot better since he returned. Him and Bobby Portis being a tandem that seems to be coming off the bench and being the best in the NBA right now at that. For whatever reason, this situation with him and Nico Mirotic, and then all of a sudden getting the confidence back in Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen exceeding every expectation I think anybody else had out there. And the combination of just, I think, all of these guys for once under Fred Hoiberg since he's been in Chicago is buying in and buying into the style that Fred Hoiberg's playing, sort of just taking command and listening and just sort of buying in altogether. So as far as Fred Hoiberg goes, I don't know what your feelings were when he initially came into the Bulls and had sort of the end of the Derrick Rose era and then Jimmy Butler around with the Dwayne Wade Rondo situation last year. Over this, just this season alone, where Fred Hoiberg's really been able to take command of this team and have a lot of young guys, which is his strength. I mean, at ISU, when he was there, his strength was being able to collectively as a group bring on young guys and get them to buy in. Now that he's doing that here, do you have different feelings from what you thought when he came in with the Bulls? And is there more credit to be given to Fred Hoiberg than maybe some of us have given over the last 2.5-3 seasons?
I think that right now it's undeniable that Fred is getting the most out of this roster, right? So he clearly is doing a good job at that, but I don't think it answers the questions of the top flight talent and his ability to mesh that. But then he also hasn't had top flight talent that's matched up well with his preferred system. And when he had future Hall of Famer Dwayne Wade, he wasn't playing at a Hall of Fame level, and Jimmy Butler wasn't a pace and space guy who could shoot a bunch of threes. He's more of an ISO guy who is ball dominant. So it's not like any coach can't coach great players, and then this system seems to work for the modern NBA, and he seems to develop talent and maximize talent. So, yeah, I think we have to give Fred Hoiberg a lot of credit. I was always a Tibbs guy. And
me
I
too.
I thought he was a great coach, and I thought that the front office completely unfairly made him the scapegoat for injuries and the team not winning a championship, when I don't think any coach would have been able to coach that team in those circumstances to a championship.
Don't tell C-Red Fred that. He'll yell at you about minutes. Minutes this and minutes that.
Yeah, I think that's nonsense and been proven as such when looking around the league, but I'm not really interested in relitigating the Bulls of 4 years ago. I covered Fred Hoiberg at Iowa State. When they got rid of Tibbs, I thought that Hoiberg maybe was going to be Brad Stevens and was going to be, you know, the offensive coach with the NBA background and collegiate creativity who would really give them a decided advantage and bring their offense into the 21st century. And then he just wasn't given the parts. It was like asking a great Mexican chef or something to cook without tortillas, rice, and cheese. Like, they're probably somewhat limited in what they can do. So I think that Fred Hoiberg is showing that he can coach. And I think that Fred, I'd be fascinated to know if in 2 years and he got better players and these guys developed, how much better he would be. But I'm also the same guy that didn't think that Fred Hoiberg was the problem the last 2 years. Like, I think that he was overwhelmed by the personality and the ego in the locker room, but those guys just did not fit. They were not good. There was no coach that was winning a ton of games with the collection of talent that the Bulls had trotted out on the floor the last few years. So to me, there's very few difference-making coaches in the NBA, and I think it's still very much up in the air whether Fred Hoiberg is one of them.
All right, Danny, as we're talking with Danny Parkins of the Spiegel and Parkin Show on 670 The Score, we got to get your take on what seems to be basically the biggest consensus conversation among Bulls Nation right now, and that is where you stand on the on which side of the fence do you find yourself, whether it's we're screwing up what should be a tanking season with these wins, or hey, these wins mean that the pieces we got in the Butler trade are actually better than advertised. This young core is better than advertised, and let's not mess with a good thing and let's cheer for this team to win games. Obviously, you know, we talk about Hoiberg making progress. He and John Paxson have both said, look, you know, we're trying to win games. The players are going out there on the court trying to win games every night. We're not trying to lose. We're not trying to tank. Of course, that's the catch 22 of the situation. You personally, I'm curious, where do your allegiances lie? as far as what the Bulls do with the back half of this season? Would you rather see them lose a bunch of games and get closer to having a decent amount of ping pong balls to draw themselves a top five pick? Or would you not mind if they kind of end up somewhere in the back end of the lottery and string together more impressive, encouraging wins with this new young core?
I want Dunn, Markkanen, and LaVine to have great games every night and lose. Like, to me, that's
thank you.
That's where you've got to be.
Yeah.
But it's what is true is that when you're a Bulls fan and you're watching the game and they're down one with the ball and 16 seconds left, it's hard cognitively in the moment to think big picture and root for a miss, because if they run a great play that gets Markkanen a look, you want him to hit that shot because it's Markkanen, right? Like, the worst
right.
case scenario is Robin Lopez hitting a game winner, or yeah. you know what I mean, or like Justin Holiday hitting a game winner. Like, those are the results that suck. If Markkanen shows that he can get the ball and Durant switches over to him and he does a sweet move and he hits the game winner, like, you can't be mad about Markkanen going one-on-one with Durant and hitting a game winner. Like, it's just an impossibility.
I share your opinion. I was at the game last night, and as much as I am of the belief and agree with you that the Bulls should be losing games this season because I do want a top five pick, As a Bulls fan, in that moment when the Bulls made that run late in the fourth quarter after the terrible third, and Markkanen had a 3-point attempt that could have cut the lead to two with 45 seconds left or whatever was on the clock, in that moment I wanted him to hit that shot so badly.
Of course, there's nothing wrong with that. And by the way, like, I believe Garpax when they say that they want him to hit that shot, right? Like, you deal with it at the end. You don't know how the draft's going to be. You don't know how the ping pong balls are going to go. You don't know about injury. You don't know about a player demanding a trade who becomes available. You don't know about what other teams are going to spend on guys. Like, there's just so many things that are, you can't predict. Like, when the game is on, it's totally reasonable to root for your team to win. Having said all of that, though, the best transcendent players normally come at the top of the draft, and I don't trust Garpax anywhere near completely, much less at all, but you have to give them some credit for winning the Jimmy Butler trade and getting the most out of that deal. But that doesn't absolve them of the sins of the past. So it's easier to scout the truly elite talent at the top of the draft. So there's a better chance that the Bulls are going to find a great player if they have the fourth pick than if they have the 14th pick. Like, that's just how it is. And that's the same thing for anybody. So since they're not going to win anything of substance this year, I would rather them get as many ping pong balls as possible, because it supposedly is a great top-heavy draft. And let's go out and get another difference maker to add to this impressive young core. Like, it's, I don't think that those two thoughts are in as much conflict with each other as Bulls fans are making it out to be. Like, it's a good thing that LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen look like real pieces of a championship team. But we know that it's not, we know that if they just stood pat with all of it, this team as it's currently constructed would never become a championship team, right? Like, we know that they're not good enough as presently constructed, that like two more years of development, keep it all together, the Bulls are in an Eastern Conference final. So we know they need to make more additions. Well, what kind of additions do you want to make? High-end lottery talent. How do you get high-end lottery talent? Lose more games. Like, I don't find it to be as complicated as a lot of people are making it out to be.
Yeah, and I think too, a factor that I think a lot of people forget, especially if you're a casual Bulls fan, aren't sort of monitoring the whole tank situation, is that the lottery, NBA lottery, is changing. The rules to it, the incentive to tank is changing after this season. And to start off the season going 3-20, and now this roster looks completely different, hence the last 2-3 weeks of what the Bulls have just put together and the confidence that you're getting from some of these young guys. I think it's an interesting dynamic, and I've told Matt this before, that, you know, if the Bulls don't get in that top five this season after going 3-20, regardless of what they do with the rest of the season, the development that you do have with Markkanen and Dunn and LaVine, and maybe even you can toss in some other guys too, as part of a rebuild or sort of an improvement on some of these players like Bobby Portis and even David Nwaba has been an electrifying surprise this season. So I think it's an interesting dynamic when we talk about players and whether or not it's guaranteed that you're going to get a franchise changer in the draft. So we had a really good question brought up from one of our listeners. This kind of ties in to what we were talking about of losing games and trying to get into that top five. This comes from Paven Nandi. He said, "It's widely considered that there are about 4 to 6 franchising changing players available in 2018 draft. Got me thinking about last draft that was widely considered to have multiple franchise changing players, which was in 2014. So he goes on to explain Joel Embiid, Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins, Aaron Gordon, Dante Exum, and even Julius Randle were all considered to be significant number of experts and scouts really changing fortunes for teams. Almost 4 years later, we have two players that look pretty decent, Joel Embiid and Jabari Parker, but both have suffered injuries and have had limited action on the floor. So he asks, if the Bulls do get a top five pick here in this draft that's supposed to be considered franchise changing and heavy at the top in 2018, does it set up as a cautionary tale to look back at some of these other drafts like 2014 and not rely so heavily on teams to rebuild with top five picks? I think he brings up interesting points about the 2014 draft and how it compares to 2018. But what are your thoughts in terms of evaluating talent maybe at the top and what experts always say and how it ends up turning out 2, 3, 4 years down the road?
I think it's a point that is well taken and maybe slightly misguided. Using like one draft and some experts being wrong about a few guys.
Agreed.
Just because if you look throughout, like you got to just go with a bigger sample than that, right? Just look at NBA superstars. And yes, Steph Curry was 7. And yes, Giannis was 15. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, end of the first round, Draymond, top of the second round. Like we can do that all day. What's the best way to get a great player?
Exactly what you just said, lose games.
It's the best way. This is the best way. Like the absolute majority of them are the top picks in the draft every single year. Like it's just more likely than not, right? Like just whether you want to say, man, they really messed up with Sam Bowie, but Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon were 1 and 3. You know, like it's just every single Tim Duncan, top of the draft. And so yes, it's possible that you can find Markkanen at 7. You can find Kobe in the lottery where, you know, all that stuff. That is possible, but it's easier to identify the truly elite talent at the top of the draft. So get a pick at the top of the draft. Like it's a cautionary tale in that nothing is guaranteed and they could get a top pick and they could mess up and they could take Darko, or they could take Johnny Flynn, or they could take Michael Olowokandi, or they could take any of the busts. Like you could play that game all day, but if you believe in your talent evaluators, which again, many Bulls fans don't, but the point is it's easier when you have more guys to pick from, right? Like you want to have the ability to have the fewest number of teams pick in front of you so that you can get the guy who's highest up on your board. Your board might be wrong, but you want to have as the most number of guys on your board available to you. So it's a point that is well taken, but I don't think the conclusion from a point like that is, well, the draft's a crapshoot, so you've got just as good of a chance to get a superstar at 12 as you do at 1. That's not true. Like that is just like a fundamentally untrue thing. You can, but that would be like saying, well, Kurt Warner was bagging groceries and he went to the Super Bowl, so you've got just as good of a chance of getting a Super Bowl quarterback at, you know, Mariano's as you do from USC. Like that's just ridiculous. So you have to take that information and know that while there are no guarantees, we're not dealing in guarantees. We're just trying to give the Bulls the best chance to frankly walk into a transcendent talent to put them back in the NBA finals.
Right. And as we are kind of, you know, hedging our bets of being excited for this young core and also hoping for a top tier lottery pick in the summer of 2018, the other piece of that puzzle is the February 8th trade deadline that's rapidly approaching. And the fact that most people believe the Bulls will make at least one trade, if not several, to some of their veteran pieces to try to bring in assets like draft picks. And obviously Nico Mirotic is the biggest name that keeps being mentioned. Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, even Jaren Grant has come up recently. But obviously Nico's the main one, and it's partly because of the his saga with Bobby Portis, and seems like he wants to go play in Utah. But I mean, I don't know about you, Danny. I didn't buy all those reports that were coming out that were like, oh yeah, as soon as that January 15th date rolls around, he's good, he's gone. Well, I'm sorry, that was Monday. It's Thursday. He's still here. I just didn't, whether it was Utah or Portland or Detroit, the fact that we heard that the Bulls front office is determined to get a first round pick for Nico one way or another, and the fact that he was as good as gone, meaning like, oh, some deal was already agreed to and in place. I'm sorry, I didn't buy the fact that there was even one team out there calling up the Bulls at 12:01 a.m. on the 15th to say, here, take our first round draft pick for Nico. So I was just curious, what are your thoughts on where the Bulls sit right now with still plenty of time before the deadline, but kind of a lull of quiet? Maybe it's the calm before the storm, but a lot of talk about the Bulls selling off some pieces to maybe gear them back towards that tank, and nothing's happened yet.
Well, you got to look at the rest of the league too. There haven't been any other trades. Like it takes two to tango, right? So that's, I think, important to remember here. I think the Bulls are probably fairly motivated sellers because, like we said, they want to be bad and they want to acquire assets, and this isn't the year they're going to win. But you don't want – if the difference between getting a second-round pick and a lottery-protected first-round pick is two more weeks of Nico Mirotic, then – it behooves you to exercise a little bit of patience and not let other teams take advantage of your desperation. So I have every reason to believe that the Bulls will sell some pieces around the deadline. Do I think that some of the reporting has been a little overstated because they are basically just putting the message from Nico Mirotic's camp out there for him, which is what journalism, sports journalism anyway, is, right? Like, a lot of these sources are agents. The agents represent a biased position, and they say that they want to be traded, and so that's a source, and you print it, and that's how it goes. Like, that's how it works. Just like if your source is on the team, that's a biased standpoint also. Like, so I do think that Nico's going to be traded. I do think that Lopez should be traded. I do think that Jaren Grant and Justin Holiday should be shopped, and if you can get anything of value whatsoever, and I mean, like, a future second round pick, you should do it. Like, I think the Bulls should gut this team as much as they possibly can to lose as many games as they possibly can while still developing Dunn, Levine, Markkanen, and anybody else who might be here when they're good. So I'm with you. I don't think it was ever going to be January 15th. And I said as much on the air because that's just taking away your own leverage. Like, the Bulls should have the stance of, we're perfectly happy to keep Nico Mirotic until our price is met, and when our price is met, we're perfectly happy to move Nico Mirotic. That's how all of these things go, and, you know, the old adage, deadlines make deals. I think that's more than likely what's going to happen also. It'll come closer to the deadline. February 3rd will roll around or something like that, and then they'll trade Nico Mirotic. That's just a blind guess, but my guess is that's how it works.
I want to throw this out there too, because I tweeted this out last night, just sort of after the competitive Bulls Warriors game. And I took a look at the schedule for the Bulls. The Bulls play 8 games between now and the February 8th deadline. And this is what scared me. And so those 8 games include 5 lottery teams, which is Atlanta, the Lakers, the Clippers, Sacramento, and the 76ers. It also includes a Bucks team, which the Bulls are 3-0 against this season. 3-0 against the Bucks. And then you play 2 teams in the Pelicans and the Trailblazers, who you both took to overtime and blew games in both of those. Both of those games were winnable games by the Bulls. So it makes me think now, this is an important stretch. And I talked about it with Matt too as well. We've said it on the show that I said, I felt like January was the most important month for the Bulls in terms of which way they want to go in the direction of this future. Because in this stretch of games, say the Bulls pick up, say they go 6-2, or say they go even 5-3, they continue to push themselves and separate themselves away from that top 3, top 4 worst teams in the league. And if they wait too long on these and they start picking up additional wins and then send Nico somewhere, maybe send Robin somewhere, so maybe send Justin Holiday somewhere, or even Jerry and Grant, all the names that we've talked about, I feel like in that instance, it might be a little bit too late to consider yourselves, outside of pure luck like they did with Derrick Rose, to consider yourself to be a team that's going to end up with a top five pick. And now that leaves room to maybe a trade goes down in the summer where the Bulls do highly tout the top five talents in the top five of this draft. And we've heard from multiple people, including Nick Friedell, who said that the Bulls have a high respect for all five of those guys. I mean, take that with a grain of salt with other NBA teams. But I'm wondering from your perspective, John Paxson's been through this is his third rebuild now with the Bulls. Gar Forman's been a part of now his second. Do you expect the front office to trade away these guys with the idea in mind that a top five pick could be sort of diminishing as the days go on leading up to that February deadline? And sort of what's your idea of what the Bulls could get just outside of Nico? I'm interested in Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, or even Jerry and Grant, guys that could help you pick up wins when you're looking at tanks. So overall, sort of in what capacity do you feel that the Bulls will get deals done and they'll get return that they might want?
Good question. Anyone who's telling you that they know, I think, is lying. I think all of those guys are potentially on the table. I think that Nico is the only one that could potentially return like a real asset. You know, we made a big deal about Jordan Bell and second round picks, but you don't build a championship team through second round picks. You know, the Draymond Greens are a one in a million type of shot. So I think that if you're selling those off for future second round picks, you're doing it because help a team right now, and you're just trying to lose more games right now, and you get a draft pick and you can buy picks or move picks and just use it as an asset for the cap or whatever in the future. Like, I think that Nico's the only thing that they could trade where they have any sort of hope of getting anything that you guys would be excited about. Like, who's giving up a first round pick for Justin Holiday? Right?
No one.
Nobody. So to me, those types of any move that they make that isn't Nico Mirotic, it's not like for their purposes, it obviously matters. But for our purposes, or at least my level of NBA capology and general manager thinking, like, you know, maybe you orchestrate a trade where you bring back a contract that's expiring, and then you could pair that with your trade exemption that the Bulls still have from one of their previous moves, and they can then acquire a contract that is a little bit exorbitant in terms of price, but it's still a good player. You know, like, there's levels to this thing that they can still do that'll matter. So I'm not saying a trade of Holiday or Lopez or whatever that they get back, I'm not saying that it's irrelevant, but I think the only thing that they could get, the only piece they could move that would get back something that would truly interest or motivate the fan base, is Nico Mirotic. I hope that answered your question.
Just quickly following up on that, in terms of those eight games before the trade deadline, does that scare you at all that the Bulls, the way that they're playing right now, does that scare you at all that kind of they could end up separating themselves from a potentially, you know, 20, 30, 40% chance of being the top three, a 15 to 20% chance of being a top, you know, the very top pick?
Yeah, of course it does, right? Like, that's what we're talking about here. And I mean, good job looking ahead at the schedule. You know, The Bulls can lose to anybody is the thing. Like, I still believe that they have that in them to lose to anyone. But yeah, absolutely. It's the type of thing where, you know, this game against Atlanta, big tank opportunity. Like, let's go out there and lose to the Hawks. You know, like, that's one that give them a win, give us a loss, that sort of thing. Like, I'm on board with that type of thinking. But there's a reality here that we probably have to accept. They're not a bottom three team in the NBA, even if they trade Lopez and Mirotic. Like, they're not. Markkanen's really good, and Dunn is playing really well. And because of that, that's going to be enough with Levine, which we know is a very good offensive player. Like, that core right there is better than some of the teams in the league, because the Bulls are not doing something that's a very original thought right now. They're trying to be bad. Like, half the teams in the damn Eastern Conference are trying to be bad. So, you've got to be spectacularly bad to be a bottom three team this year. And I think that the Bulls might have already ruined hopes of that. And, you know, back to the question that the listener asked about the draft picks, because it's just sitting with me a little bit. The goal is to win a championship. And The best player in the league is LeBron James. He's been in the last 8 straight. He was the number 1 overall pick. The second best player in the league is Kevin Durant, and he was the 2nd overall pick in the draft. So, goals to win a championship, that's what you got to do. We think Houston's the next best team, right? They're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. They're led by James Harden. He was the 3rd pick in the draft. The Celtics are going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're led by Kyrie Irving. He was the number 1 pick in the draft. If it's not Boston, maybe it's Washington. They're led by John Wall. He was the number 1 pick in the draft. So if you want to be elite and play for championships, that's where you need to be. And it looks like the Bulls have messed up their chance this year at being elite. But why, again, it's a little bit more palatable to take is it looks like Lauri Markkanen's a future all-star. Like, it looks like they got an all-star with the 7th overall pick in the draft. And that's a huge, huge win for the Bulls rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, it's a win in the Jimmy Butler trade. And I mean, you don't necessarily say that the Bulls won that trade. I think both teams won that trade because you look at, I think it was The Athletic had a great column about what Jimmy Butler is doing for the Minnesota Timberwolves right now. And he's been on a tear in the back half of December and into January. And both teams won that trade. I think when that trade went down, certainly a majority of Bulls fans crushed it. Front office got lambasted. Oh my God, another terrible trade. We just gave away a top 15 player for a guy with a busted ACL, a draft bust, and who the hell is this Lauri Markkanen kid? That was the overarching narrative among Bulls fans. And I feel like the more that some of them who were skeptical, if they are watching the season, are learning that maybe, you know, don't judge so quickly. Don't bust out your jump to conclusions, Matt. The Bulls won that trade for what they wanted to do. And as you mentioned, the reason that maybe their plan to get a high draft pick this year is going poorly is because the guys they got in that trade are outperforming their expectations. And that's a good thing. So with that in mind,
go ahead. Well, no, the other thing I was going to say, if you want to even take it to the next level, because I've been thinking about this and talking about it a bit on the show, but I think it's very interesting, is look at the rest of the teams that traded players and how those moves went down and were received in those cities. Because the Bulls fans weren't the only ones crushing the Bulls for trading an all-NBA caliber talent and getting what seemed like 60 cents on the dollar.
Pacers.
That's what happened with Indiana and Paul George. And the Pacers clearly won that trade with Oladipo. It kind of happened with the Knicks and Carmelo. And the Knicks clearly won that trade, just addition by subtraction. They're no worse off, and some of the other guys have developed a little bit. The Chris Paul one isn't as good of a comp because he could have left for nothing, and he didn't. But, you know, and the Rockets are really good, so that's not a perfect comp. And then Kyrie, well, Kyrie's awesome, and the Celtics are really good. The Cavs have some problems. The Cavs, I still would pick them in a series over the Celtics because of LeBron. They have the Brooklyn pick, and they had no leverage with Kyrie. Like, Kyrie basically demanded a trade and was miserable, and it was an untenable situation to bring him back. And they got Jay Crowder, who they need, Isaiah Thomas, who can score, and the 8th overall pick. Like, maybe that trade's a slight win for Boston or a neutral, but part of being a general manager is reading the market, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we thought, as idiots who are just fans of the Bulls, no offense, I lump myself in, but like we thought, like, of course Jimmy Butler's worth more than that, and he wasn't. And then You look at the rest of the league, and like Pacers fans were like, of course Paul George is worth more than that, and he wasn't. Of course Kyrie's worth more than that, and he wasn't. So I think that tells you something about the competency level, and it makes me want to throw up in my mouth to credit Garpax, but there's something to, even if the guys didn't work out in the trade, and it looks like they are going to, they read the market right, and they didn't sell nearly as well on Jimmy Butler as we thought they did.
So with that in mind, do you have faith that they can get this Nico deal done? In my opinion, if they somehow get a first-round pick, maybe it has protections on it, maybe not. If they can get a first-round pick for Nico, I think that's another element of giving the Bulls front office credit when everyone in Chicago was so reluctant to give them credit and so quick to tear them down. The Butler trade is looking like a win. Obviously, let's all forget that the OKC Thunder trade ever happened, because that one was obviously, I mean, that one was horrendous. But I mean, if their next big move after the Jimmy Butler trade is executing a trade for Nico where they get themselves another first round pick, that is, I mean, that's two wins in a row for the Bulls front office, right?
Yeah, yes, it is. Although I guess I would just say that Nico has made it really easy. Nico's good.
He's good right now.
Well, yeah, I know he's good right now, but like I don't under like Bulls fans seem to think that he is going to regress and be bad again, and I think that that is.
You don't believe that there's a chance that happens after what you've seen from him in his previous three seasons?
Of course there's a chance, but he looks different than when he was good in the past. He beat out Bobby Portis for the job before the season. He has added weight. He stayed here in the offseason instead of training with his international team. Like there were signs that there was all the reports on Nico was looking good in practice, reading really good, going to start at the four, was going to keep Markkanen on the bench, and then he got hurt. And then he came back from being hurt, and it was like, holy shit, everything they said about Nico from the offseason is actually true. He is bigger. He is playing with confidence. He is pump-faking less. He is adding more things to his game. Like, I think that it's clicked for Nico, and I'm not saying that he's going to be top 20 in the NBA in three-point shooting or anything, but it's definitely conceivable that he is, and he's only 26 years old, and he is an international player making the adjustment to the pro game, and he was made fun of and belittled in that locker room with Wade and Butler and those stars, and he was playing in a system that didn't fit his game because they weren't moving the ball around all the time, and he was a little undersized physically, and now he's added on some muscle. So, like, why is it so inconceivable that this is what Nico Mirotić is going to be for the next 4 years of his career? Like, I don't understand why that's impossible.
I think the only thing I would parlay all of that with is the fact that he came back early on in December, and if you look at his stats over the last 3-4 seasons that he's been here, he's consistently had his best month in the first season, the first month of action. We all talk comp about how it's funny that he seems to go off in March, and that's sort of been Nico's month. But statistically, he's actually been the best. He plays the best in the first month of his season. We're kind of over that tipping point right now. So that's why I think it gets super interesting to watch Nico over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks and see how if he can sustain this consistency. I'm right. I'm there with you. I said it to Matt.
What do you think is going to happen? I'm confused. Like, what's going to happen? He's going to just stop making shots. He's going to stop taking shots. He's going to.
Yeah, maybe. I think Nico's going to lose
20 pounds. Like, what's
I think Nico is a very confident player right now, but I think mentally he is a very weak player, and that's why he has his stretches of doldrums. Yes, a part of it was that he was not playing in a system that catered to his skills. I grant you that, Danny. But I also
and he was being beaten down mentally by Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade.
Okay, well then that means he was mentally weak.
Yeah, but he hadn't had success yet. That you know what I mean? Like, did you watch that game last night? He felt like he was the best player on the floor.
He was the best player on the for the Bulls. He was the best player on the Bulls that night. Absolutely.
So, you know, like, he's on the floor with Durant and Steph and Markkanen and all these dudes, and he's up there pulling up from 27 feet, giving himself heat checks. Like, that's a guy with an insane amount of confidence. And I'm with you. It can be a fleeting thing. And I'm not saying he'll never go through a spell again or a stretch of bad play. Of course he will. I don't think that Nico Mirotić is going to be like a 5-time All-Star. That's not what I'm saying. But I think Bulls fans should prepare themselves that they are going to – like, if you just look at the Nico Mirotić trade as trading Nico and what you're getting for Nico, the Bulls are probably going to lose the trade. Now, you have to evaluate it by what you get back for Nico and then the number of the fewer wins that you'll have, right, with the more losses you'll get and then how much that'll rise you up the draft board and all of that. But – if the Bulls get the 24th pick in the draft for Nico Mirotić, I think that there is a very, very real likelihood. In fact, I would bet on it that whatever the Bulls get with the 24th pick in the draft, when it's all said and done and we do this podcast in 10 years, like that Nico Mirotić will have had a better NBA career than whatever the Bulls got back for him in this trade. I think that is overwhelmingly likely.
That's That's a pretty hot take, in my opinion. You never know who's coming in that 24th pick. I do. I think we know what Nico's ceiling is. And I think what we're seeing right now is his ceiling.
Isn't his ceiling like 17-7?
Yeah, and you don't think the Bulls can find a guy like that who happens to fall in the draft, in the first round of the draft for whatever reason?
I mean, most first-round picks do not have 17-7 seasons. I will bet you that whatever draft pick the Bulls get back for Nico Mirotic does not have a better season than Nico Mirotic has this season. I will make that wager with you.
Well, that's an irrelevant thing. If you're talking about adding a young piece to a team that's rebuilding right now, I don't care if the Bulls do in fact get a pick for Nico, I don't care if his rookie season is better or worse than what Nico does this year. It's totally irrelevant.
No. I didn't say his rookie season. I said any season.
Oh, any season.
So you're saying over the course of that time in his career.
Over player X's career will not be better than the season that Nico Mirotic is having right now.
I'll absolutely take that bet with you.
Okay.
The one thing I will say about all of this, and you, Matt and I, for the year that we've been doing this show, for the longest time, we were both Nico Mirotic haters, and this was all before he started playing well. He came out, like you had said, I think there's been a total shift in the way Nico carries himself now. It's open and evident to the media. It's open and evident to, I think, a lot of fans that to understand that, you know, this is Nico's time. He understands it as well, being 26. This is a very crucial season in his career. I think the flip in script of his mantra, the way he goes about things and just the confidence level that he's holding in himself and betting on himself time and time again, I think is different than, like you had said, over the last 2-3 years that we've seen when he has to play along stars. And also, too, I think to Nico's credit, he's getting a lot more opportunity on the offensive side of the ball. He's driving to the basket, which we never saw him do with Butler or at the end of Rose's. He was sort of that guy that was just kind of hanging out in the corners, looking to take a 3-point shot. And that wasn't really what got the most out of Nico Mirotic, I would say, in that point. So for Matt, I still think
they should trade Nico. Like, I said all of that, and I still think they should trade him because I don't think he lines up with their plan because he's 2 years away from, like, a real payday, and the Bulls are not going to be the team that gives it to him, so you may as well get an asset and get some more losses this year in the process since you're not going to the playoffs this year. So, like, I still think they should trade him, but I just think Bulls fans should be prepared that it looks to me like it's clicked for him. This doesn't feel fluky to me.
Agreed. I'm with you on that too. And I said, you know, it's unfortunate that it's happening right now instead of back when we did have Butler and we were on those runs and we could have really used Nico Mirotic. But if the Bulls can get anything, like I said, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Nico to be on this roster for the direction that I think the Bulls are trying to go towards. If you can get anything for him, I think it's a win for the Bulls and it's a win for Nico to start over somewhere else. To kind of wrap up the show, I want to throw one last question out at you, Danny Parkins. So as a bit of a troll myself, I started a thread on our Locked On Bulls Twitter account early on in November. The first game marketing popped off and I went back and caught everybody that was talking bad about Lauri Markkanen after the post-trade night, post-draft night, takes in things that people were saying about Markkanen that were just flat out wrong. People seem to love it. So I want to know, is there a guy when you're in your time of covering college basketball or even just being in the business that you were so sold on that he was going to be good that ended up turning out to be bad, or vice versa, a guy that you were really sold on that everybody said you're crazy if you take him and he ended up to prove himself in the NBA? Is there anybody that comes out to you that kind of sticks out into your mind that you're like, yeah, that guy, I was totally right about that guy, or I was flat out wrong about him?
I mean, how much time do you have? I mean, I told Johnny Flynn to his face that I thought he was too short for the NBA.
That's great.
And yeah, we were standing next to each other, and I was like noticeably taller than him, and I am 6'1". And there was a preseason game in the Carrier Dome. It was when Shaq was on the Suns,
and it was Suns Nuggets, and Melo was on the Nuggets. So, like, Melo and his team always came back and did a preseason game. And we were standing courtside next to each other. We knew each other a little bit. And I was like, man, do you think you're tall enough to play in this league for real? And he looked at me and he was like, are you fucking seriously asking me that question? And we had, and I was like, I don't see it. And so I was dead right on Johnny Flynn. I said that Joel Embiid was going to be a Hall of Famer if he stayed healthy at Kansas, with Bill Self, and my co-host hated me for it because he was a Missouri fan. And I still think Joel Embiid is, like, arguably the most talented basketball player not named LeBron James in the NBA right now, like, in terms of actual talent. But I don't know if he'll ever stay healthy to be a Hall of Famer. But on the wrong side, I got a few. I mean, everyone's got those. Also covering KU, I thought that Ben McLemore was going to be more than just a shooter, and that with his athleticism, he would develop like a Dwayne Wade type of game, and that's just never happened for some reason. So I'll give you the two that I feel like I was right on, and Johnny Flynn and Joel Embiid, and very wrong in the versatile game of Ben McLemore.
Those are great. And I'll throw one out there for you that I had while I was at, I went to school at Indiana and got to cover teams that included Cody Zeller and Yogi Ferrell and Troy Williams and even Victor Oladipo while he was there. And I remember people laughed at the idea that Victor Oladipo was a top five pick and his transition into the NBA wasn't that great. He moved from three teams in three seasons, didn't look all that in shape. And then he went to the Pacers and it seems like something clicked with Victor Oladipo. He got all the confidence in the world. He got in shape and now is turning out to be what that top five pick was supposed to be. The way he played in college too, I thought was phenomenal too. And a lot of people were laughing at me for the first couple of years while he was in the league and couldn't really consider him anything but more than maybe just a slight bust. But I'm glad that he's turned it on in Indiana too, with the Pacers. So, but that's funny about Joel Embiid. I think you're spot on too. I think it's a guy, if he ever stays healthy, I think he's going to be dominant for a hell of a long time in the NBA.
I just watched him practice one time, like early on at KU's, like before, it was before Big 12 play, after their, you know, like Midnight Madness thing, they call it Late Night in the Fog. And I was watching him practice, and I, you know, read about him and Top Recruit and all of that. And he was doing the Dream Shake, and it was insane. And, you know, KU has this long history of developing big men, at least collegiate big men. Like, they don't, most of them don't do anything in the NBA, but, you know, they had a run of, you know, putting out Morris twins and Jeff Withey and Cole Aldrich and all these dudes who would just, Wayne Simien, every single power forward from KU was like the, you know, Nick Collison was like the 9th to 14th pick in the draft, like every single year. And I was just watching him. I was like, wait a minute. That's the dude that was playing soccer in Cameroon like 3 years ago. He's been playing basketball for 30 months. Like, he's legitimately 7'2". He's gigantic. Like, he's not skinny, and he is doing the Dream Shake from like 12 feet away on the baseline. And it blew my mind. And then, you know, I kept talking about him and talking about him and talking about him, and his stats were not great in college, but like, just could not stop talking about him on the show. And I finally have had my comeuppance like 5 years, 4 years later, and I'm not even in Kansas City doing radio anymore to brag about it. So.
All right, Danny. Well, before we let you go, we wanted to give you the chance to give a quick plug to our Locked On Bulls listeners in case they want to get themselves one of those sick 3.5 million Bulls tees that you guys are doing over at your show. Tell us a little bit about this charity that's behind it and where our Locked On Bulls listeners can get one of these t-shirts.
Yeah, this might be the last plug for the shirt. SpiegelandParkinsStuff.com is where you can get it. FeedMyStarvingChildren.org is the organization. Matt Spiegel, my co-host, his lovely fiance, is heavily involved with Feed My Starving Children. She's a site manager. It's an international company. They have like a 93 score on the, you know, charity quality equation. I'm not even sure exactly what it's called. It's definitely not the charity quality equation, I can tell you that much. But it's 93 out of 100. So international organization, chief site manager for one in the Chicago area. They do literally what they say in the title. They feed starving children. The t-shirts are $15, and we are taking, you know, the guy who's making the shirts and doing the shipping and doing literally all of the work for us, he is doing them for below a little bit of his cost, and but still is making his money back. So I can't say that all of your money goes to the charity, but we get no money, and the profits and proceeds, all of that goes to the charity. So no one is like getting rich and profiting off this in any way. And so a large percentage, more than half of the money that you spend on the $15 shirt will in fact go to the charity. So it's pretty cool.
SpiegelandMarketingStuff.com.
Yeah.
There you go. You can spend $15, get yourself an awesome Bulls tee, and none of that money will go to Jerry Reinsdorf. This is a win-win situation.
I can promise you that.
All right. Well, we have enjoyed having you on, Danny. He's Danny Parkins, one of the hosts of the Spiegel and Parkins Show, the midday show from 9 a.m. to 1, weekdays on 670 The Score. You can follow him on Twitter, at Danny Parkins. Danny, thanks for chatting Bulls with us, man. We had a good time.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yep, thanks. Anytime.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to give a special thank you to Danny Parkins of 670 The Score on the Spiegel and Parkins Show. You can catch that middays Monday through Friday, 9 to 1. On 670 AM and the TuneIn app. We want to thank him again. You can follow him at Danny Parkins and or their show at Spiegel_Parkins. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Locked On Bulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts. You'll find us. We're live on Dash Radio Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. Tomorrow, we'll bring you into the weekend with a bunch of conversation. Matt, we definitely got to get back to that Anthony Davis conversation because we sparked a lot of emotion, a lot of things that I didn't necessarily think were going to come out of that conversation at the end of our show on Wednesday. But I want to get back to that. I want to kind of lead into a little bit more of a conversation about looking ahead at the schedule and so many other things to lead you guys into the weekend. For Locked On Bulls, for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.